Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 42, meaning that it's the answer to just about everything. Recorded Monday, January 9th, 2012. Hey, everybody, welcome to the CES 2012 edition of The Social Hour from Las Vegas in the South Hall of the Convention Center. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in South Florida. Not exactly at CES, but I am tuning into all that's happening there, Sarah, and looks like you guys are busy.
Yeah, this is actually the last day of setup before CES officially is open to the public and things get really crazy. So you'd be surprised how many booths behind us at our stage, the same stage that TWiT was at last year, for anybody who was either here in person or watched all of our programming. But there's a lot left to do behind us. I mean, we're still setting up, but we're pretty much done for the most part. But it's amazing how quickly things change around here. Right now, it's like, boy, are they going to be ready for the public by tomorrow? But they will be. People will be in here working around the clock. So very exciting. A little overwhelming, and I've only been here an hour.
Hey, Sarah, I'm curious. I bet. I'm curious that what you think as far as CES and the social element that will play into some of the gadgets and some of the features and functionality. I'm guessing, you know, like last year, it's going to continue to be a really big topic as far as the integration.
Yeah. CES, of course, is very much a gadget showcase show. And so you think social, well, so that's one of those things that CES wouldn't really be good at. Well, the thing is that right now, I mean, I would say going into the show, the big trends that everyone's talking about are smart TVs, you know, TVs that have, you know, whether it's Google TV or some sort of native widget integration, more and more, that's a big showcase as well as 3D. Quite a few ultrabooks. And the thing about CES is that so much of the buzz happens outside of this convention center. Some of us are here, but most of the news that happens can be absorbed by anybody and certainly shared by anybody. So it's really a global phenomenon, as any show is these days. Mm-hmm. It's easier and easier, I think, not to go to places like this.
Yeah.
And feel like you really haven't missed much, except that maybe your feet hurt less than mine.
Yeah, you know what? In some ways, it's interesting. I've been to CES a couple times before, and what I've found over the past few years, since I haven't been there on a regular basis, is I actually absorb more content, and I think I have a better sense of kind of what's being released because you can scour all the different sites so easily. Of course, you miss that social element of the whole conference.
Sure. It's really fun to be here in person. There is no substitute for the energy, the buzz, the noise, you know, the crazy central hall. But at the same time, I know what you mean. It's there is something to be said for sort of sitting back and saying, ooh, okay, let's read some of the wrap-ups from Tuesday rather than having been to every single announcement, every single press conference, every after party. But it's TWiT's going to be here all week. We're going to be live from this booth and out on the floor today through Friday afternoon. So lots more to come. And the Social Hour just happens to be the very first show recording from CES this year.
Right.
So let's
very
get
cool.
to it.
Yeah, so lots of news. One item in particular that I think we would both be interested in, as well as the many people out there who love Instagram, is that there is now better integration between Instagram and Facebook. So you are now able to create, essentially there's just an album that will be created on Facebook that will house your Instagram photos, and it makes it really easy for other people in your Facebook community to be able to like those photos and view them so they look really great instead of, you know, just kind of keeping it within the mobile audience.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I tried this out earlier because I was like, okay, what's going on here? I took a picture of our TWiT stage. You know, we're still setting up. I walked down to the foot of the stairs, took a picture, uploaded it. And from Instagram, you have a variety of choices, which other service you want to send it to, Twitter, Facebook, check into Foursquare, so on. So I went ahead and sent it to Facebook. And Alex, if you pull up my Facebook feed here, this is my profile, my timeline. Here's the picture that I took. Now, in the past, it would have been, it was sort of like a thumbnail of the Instagram picture, which would take you to an Instagram permalink page, which then you could, you know, view the photo in full and see comments. Now it's actually a picture housed by Facebook, a nice high-res picture, which you can click into. And it does still give you that Instagram permalink, but that's not your only option. And now it lives on Facebook. I could, if there was somebody in the picture, I could tag them. And people can like and comment right from within Facebook. I really like this. This is actually closer to the way it works with Path. If you send a picture on Path to Facebook, it goes into a Path Photos folder that is automatically generated. You don't even have to make it yourself. My one issue, Amber, with Path, and so far I don't think it'll be an issue on Instagram because you don't have the capability of tagging photos right from the Instagram app. But if you tag people in Path, like let's say I took a picture of the Twit booth. Well, there's nobody really in this picture that I took. But let's say I say, okay, I'm with Eileen and Jason and Tom and Ayaz. What happens is that this picture, if you do that on Path and then you send it to Facebook, all of a sudden there's it's as if I've tagged them in a photo. And that doesn't really always work because even though they're with me, they're not actually in this picture. So I found myself untagging myself from other people's Path photos. Is that something that you've run into?
I haven't run into that, but you know what I found? And I still love Instagram, but I'm using Instagram less and less because there are a few filters within Path, although I would argue that the filters aren't nearly as great as they are within Instagram. And in Path, you do have to pay for some of those filters. But there's a few that I like and kind of serve that purpose. So I find myself not using Instagram as much. I'm curious if other people have stumbled across that experience. And just because, you know, if you have your little Path community, you know, sometimes you tend to abandon other tools like this. But nonetheless, I keep reading headlines about more and more people signing up for Instagram. I think it was announced that President Barack Obama, his team just got an Instagram account. And I don't think there's any decline in growth to Instagram, but my own personal habits, I'm kind of using Path on a more regular basis.
I am too. And I think it's, even though Path and Instagram work differently when sent to Facebook, this definitely seems like Instagram responding to how well Path was integrated with Facebook because it's essentially the same kind of service, but then your photos can live on Facebook. By the way, someone in chat asked, if you delete the original picture on Instagram, will it also be deleted on Facebook? No, it's sort of similar to people who send their tweets to Facebook. You have to delete it everywhere that it ends up being sent to if you've synced up two services. So that's something to consider. If you ever want to remove something and you've sent it a variety of places, you will have to remove them manually however many times you have shared them. What Path has forced me to do for Instagram is really think about, okay, which photos am I just taking a picture of because it's more of a breadcrumb trail of what I'm doing? Path seems to work so well for that. So that now with Instagram, I think, is this picture really worth cropping? Because, of course, Instagram forces you to do a square crop. Is this picture artsy enough? Is it the kind of photo that I think I'm going to get 100 likes on? So I'm being a lot more selective with Instagram, whereas before that was just where I was posting everything.
Yeah. No, it's interesting to see what's going to happen, but I do think the integration is fantastic. And I think Instagram is just going to see those numbers continue to increase as far as signups on their service.
Absolutely. Well, Instagram has been, they've ridden an extremely popular wave for a long time, and it still sort of blows my mind how popular they are, and they're still only on iOS. I mean, they don't have an Android app yet. They don't have full web functionality. Yeah, they still have a long way to go, but they've enjoyed such a rapid growth as far as the user base goes. But it's good for them to have a little competition. And I think for its first year, Path was not a competitor to Instagram. It just wasn't. Now Path is a lot more. People are giving it another chance. I know you and I are two examples of that. So I think it's good. It's good for them to have somebody.
A little healthy competition won't hurt anyone.
That's right.
Look at us, Sarah. Very competitive.
Yeah, always have been. Always will be.
Always.
All right, well, second story of the Social Hour is about a little site you may have heard of called BuzzFeed. I love BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed is one of my favorite places to see what's hot as far as viral videos, memes. It's not necessarily 100% of a silly site, but BuzzFeed is good for that sort of thing. Well, BuzzFeed happens to have just raised over $15.5 million, and it sounds like they are not changing directions but expanding. So not only does BuzzFeed want to be sort of the silly place that people go to find out what's funny, you know, and watch cat videos, but they're ramping up to be more of what was the I'm trying to look and see what exactly the quote was in this TechCrunch article that wrote about it. Well, shoot. Now I can't find it. Darn it. Well, so they've got a few people who are joining the team. Not only did they raise a bunch of money from a variety of financiers, but they've snagged Ben Smith. He was from Politico. He's going to run the company's editorial efforts. And you think, ooh, Politico and BuzzFeed, gosh, I really wouldn't put those two together. That's a really big change for Ben Smith. But if BuzzFeed, and remember, because we're in an election year, it's like it's such a good place for viral videos, topics, articles, pictures, everything to live in one place. So this is a really good time for BuzzFeed to make sure that their image isn't just cutesy, fun stuff, but topical, viral information in a variety of areas.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I read this article, it always makes me nervous. And I think just having lived in San Francisco during the dot-com boom in the late 1990s and working at a company where we got a bunch of money. And I always think when I hear about companies like this and them getting, you know, a pretty good chunk of change, it just somehow I just keep thinking, well, how are they going to make money? You know, how are they ever going to, you know, with $15 million, how is that going to be used to be able to make this company profitable? And I don't know enough about the company, and I have used the site before, but it's always an interesting question. And sometimes I think it can lead to the death of some of these companies, but hopefully they have a good plan in place for what they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. BuzzFeed says, this was the quote I was looking for, the biggest shift for us is refocusing under Ben Smith as an organization that does real reporting and original content.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so they go on to say that successful content sites in the future will have a mixture of both lighthearted and compelling images, videos, and lists, in addition to serious and emotionally impactful content. This seems very much like a HuffPost model to me. I mean, on Huffington Post, you get a little bit of everything. Yeah. Some people find that watered down, but I think for you know, engagement of the masses, it's a good strategy. So. I love BuzzFeed.
Yeah, it definitely works.
I mean, the site that... Go ahead.
I was just going to say about Huffington Post. I mean, sometimes some of these services, they like Huffington Post, you know, I get frustrated because I feel like, okay, all they're doing is kind of using other people's content and linking to other people's content. There's no real depth to some of the articles that are there, but it would be neat to see BuzzFeed, based on that quote that you read, them actually doing more in-depth, you know, maybe longer form reporting and content that was in fact original, you know, not just linking out to other people and leveraging other posts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, good luck to BuzzFeed. I love the site. You're a great time waster. So hopefully, I can get some serious reporting in between my cat videos that I give little smiley faces to.
All right. Now, Sarah, you know, I always know that this is a good sign of some news we should talk about when a bunch of people keep posting on my Facebook page or on Twitter about a certain news item. And this one was about Facebook launching Moo Cards. And it's a partnership that they've put together. And to launch this partnership, basically, they allowed up to 200,000 people to get free Moo Cards. You could order 50 of these business cards that will essentially have your timeline incorporated with in the design. And so a lot of buzz about this on Facebook. I think it's kind of cool. I mean, Moo Cards were really big. I remember way back when with Flickr, and a lot of people were using them with some of their photos on Flickr. And I love their service. And, you know, it seems like people are excited about the timeline cards as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Moo Cards have been around for some time. I know that they had a partnership with About Me sometime back, where if you had an About Me profile, so that's about.me/Sarah Lane or anybody who has an About Me page can put together, it's kind of like a splash page. We've got a nice big photo of yourself and then some links. They had a partnership with Moo Cards so that you could get a business card that was based on your About Me profile. And I thought at the time, wow, that's a really good idea, but what's Moo really getting? I mean, I guess they're getting their cards into the hands of as many people as possible. But then now with Facebook Timeline, this is, not everybody has an About Me profile, but a lot of people have Facebook Timelines. It makes sense to definitely to get them on the map. If you haven't heard of Moo, you certainly will see a lot more physical business cards. Here's the thing, Amber, and tell me if I'm crazy. I have Twit business cards that I had to bring to CES because there are a couple of events that they absolutely will not let you into unless you have a business card. It's just prove that you're a legitimate, somebody in the workforce. But otherwise, I hate business cards. I think they are just the most archaic, unnecessary thing. I hate having them, in my pockets, and I hate taking other people's business cards because I just want them to connect with me via LinkedIn or email or some other way. Is it just me?
No, it's not just you, but every meeting I go to, if I'm meeting with a potential new client or, having a casual meeting over coffee, everybody always sets down their business card on the table. It's kind of such a tradition. Now, what I've started using, Sarah, and I don't know if you've used this before, if we've talked about it on the show, is an app called Card Munch. It syncs up with LinkedIn. And basically, if you use LinkedIn on a professional basis and you want to keep all of your professional networking within LinkedIn, Card Munch really allows you to take a picture of a card, pull that person in, and then pull in their LinkedIn information and allow you to have this really great and rich database of professional contacts. I know there's lots of other apps that scan business cards, but this one is absolutely fantastic. And I think LinkedIn is actually behind it as well.
Card Munch.
Yeah, it's a goodie. If you're forced to have business cards and you want to know what to do with them, I think people who like apps, this is and like LinkedIn, and I think this is a way to take that card, scan it, and then chuck it.
Business cards, I hate them, but I have to say the Moo cards, if you do need physical cards, are very nice ones. So maybe you'll be one of the 200,000 people. It's kind of a lot of people. Not a lot for Facebook, but it's possible that you could get some free timeline cards. I'm sure that if you like what you see, maybe a friend of yours has a timeline Moo card. There's certainly something that they're going to be offering for a very low fee in the future.
And Sarah, another reason I wanted to kind of mention the Moo cards was I think it was last week we were talking about using Facebook for personal branding. And mm-hmm. I think this is, if you do choose to do that, this is just another neat way to kind of extend your Facebook profile if you want to use it more for networking too. If you still use business cards, you love Facebook, then it's a good marriage between the two.
And even if you don't, and I know that there are the people out there who just, they hate Facebook. They don't want to use Facebook Connect. They don't want business cards that are associated with Facebook. The thing is that it doesn't really, it's not really Facebook branded. It's the idea of having that cover photo and then your little face avatar, which more and more sites, Path has almost the exact same setup. I'm not really sure who came first. Since Dave Morin actually came from Facebook, but it's a nice look. So definitely check that out. Our next story, actually, Amber, I have heard about this, but I didn't realize how big of a viral hit Rick Santorum's sweater vest is. What is the story?
So many people are probably familiar with the politician. He's a Republican, Rick Santorum. And I didn't really notice this when I've been watching some of the debates that he is very often in a sweater vest. Now, other people online have noticed and have made quite a big deal about it, including starting up a Tumblr page that's called Fear Rick's Vest. This is kind of interesting. Tumblr account with photos, some of that look kind of like behind the scenes photos, where he is pretty much always in a vest. And there is also a Twitter account that goes by a similar name, where you can follow along and see Rick Santorum in his vest as well. So neat to watch how quickly things can happen with a very active online community.
This is silly. Okay, Leo wears sweater vests all the time. Do we have to make a Tumblr page? Leo's crazy sweater vest. I mean, I guess when I imagine a sweater vest that's kind of crazy and deserving of viral attention, I think of like, you know, it's bright pink, it's got buttons or bangles, or it's too tight, or for whatever reason it's kind of silly and, you know, it's something that people can latch onto. Those are pretty normal sweater vests.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of hilarious. One of the tweets, though, I mean, clearly the person is having a little bit of fun with it. One of the tweets saying, be afraid, be very afraid when at Rick Santorum wears me. Sleeves just slow him down. And the list of funny tweets goes on and on. And, I think clearly as an individual is having a little bit, using humor to highlight one of the politicians. And also, the first thing I thought was like, I wonder if his campaign is behind this. I thought that for an instant, but I don't know. I don't know if this is a great strategy.
If his campaign is behind this, then wow, I'd be that would almost impress me more. It's not that I don't like this. I guess you have to, again, with campaign season, in a frenzy already, it's like everyone's sort of got to have something that they can poke fun at candidates for, because we have to be talking about them anyway. So at least there's the sweater vest stuff. But I don't know. I think he's got to step it up. If he knows he's got a viral hit on his hands and he's trying to get some attention, he should start going crazy sweater vests. I'm talking bright stripes, stuff that blinks.
Yeah, a little more original.
More furry vests would be kind of cool. That's my strategy.
That's
anyway.
Not very conservative, though, Sarah. I don't know if that would really be in line with his politics. Maybe a different candidate.
Maybe another candidate.
It is kind of entertaining. I mean, there's a New York Times quote that's mentioned in the article that I found on CNN that said that he was asked about his sweater vests and said that, you know, people started to notice he wore them all the time, and then his staff started buying him more and more and more. I guess he just likes them. Who knows, Sarah? It's interesting, but not many followers on Twitter.
Well, you heard it here. Go follow. What is it? Rick Santorum.
It's a fearricksvest.tumblr.com.
Fearricksvest. And then fearricksvest, the Twitter account too. Good stuff, Amber.
Good stuff.
Sweater vests, they are social, darn it. Rick said so. All right, let's move on to our social tip of the week. This helps you skip to a part of a video with a shortcut from G-Hacks.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. I did not know that you could do this on YouTube. It's a really simple thing. Let's say you don't want to watch the full video. You want to skip to different places in the video. This tiny little hack allows you to, you start watching the video and then you pause the video, and then you can press any number from 1 to 9 that corresponds with 10 to 90% of the video, and you can jump to that part within the YouTube video. I tested it out. Super, super simple, and allows people to kind of, you know, just skip over things that maybe they don't want to see, and just bypass some of the stuff on YouTube videos. And there's lots of it that I wish I had skipped in the past.
So if you're a keyboard shortcut person, this is really going to appeal to you, rather than scrubbing through the timeline on any given YouTube video. All right, so let's...
I thought at first it was super, super simple.
All right, so I pause, and then I say 9. Aha! Look at that! Now I'm 90% of the way into my video. This is awesome. Now if I pause and
it
I go
awesome.
5, ooh, yeah, and 6.
You like it, right, Sarah? I knew it.
Yeah. Oh, I like this a lot. Well, this is... it's almost... it's kind of the way I use when I'm skipping around on shows on Hulu Plus. You can scrub, a few seconds at a time. Or you can kind of scrub by chunk of show. That happens.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes I want to go through. So this is not that you should ever be wanting to skip through an episode of The Tech Guy, but another very boring video, perhaps. This could really come in handy. Oh, yeah, this is a really good tip.
It's a really simple thing. And I thought at first, okay, it's going to be a shortcut. I'm going to have to remember it. It'll be like, you know, on a Mac, maybe it's like shift and then a number. But when I actually learned, it was just literally 1 to 9. Once you've already played it and then paused the video, you just see, you know, it's not difficult to remember that. If you have trouble remembering that, that's not a good sign.
Right. Definitely. So thank you to ghacks.net for letting us know about this great YouTube keyboard shortcut. I love keyboard shortcuts. It's like once you get used to them, you never want to go back. They're very helpful. Sorry if it's gotten loud here, by the way. We have, you'll see it behind me perhaps. There's a very large crane with a man in it who's going to go right behind the set here. So You got to love live events and setting up for them. We knew it was going to be like this today, but we said, forge ahead. That's our style. I wanted to point out our spotlight this week is actually something that really might be... It's like you got to take the wide shot again. It's like the war of the... What do we even call these? Crane lifts. There's one. There's two. Oh, no. Now they're going to stop. Now they're going to... Now you stop. All right. I wanted to point out something that the New York Times posted that might be interested to a lot of people. And this is actually an internship for... it's technically called a social media internship. The New York Times newsroom is seeking academic interns for its social media desk, which works to engage its readers on social media platforms and innovate new forms of journalism. Tasks sound like something that many of you could do in your sleep. Tasks include sparking conversations on the Times social media accounts, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Tumblr, and Instagram, as well as assisting on social journalism projects. Although when you read into, and there's a whole description of what they're looking for, they say graduate students preferred, selection will be competitive, and the internship is unpaid. Now, I saw a few people complaining a little bit on Twitter this morning that it seemed like for the New York Times to say, you know, you need to be a graduate student, we're not going to pay you, obviously you need to be in New York City is... You're already going to you're already leaving a lot of people out who could, you know, do. I mean, this is the sort of thing that people get paid to do. I mean, these are jobs that companies hire for. So if you really want to work at the New York Times and you want to get in somewhere, this is possibly a great internship. But it does seem extremely selective.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that they would do that. I don't really agree entirely with unpaid internships, to be honest with you. I think even if it's just a small honorarium, I think especially a company as big as the New York Times, I think they should try to find some cash and pay up, like you said, especially if it's a graduate student. But nonetheless, they're an amazing opportunity for people to get in the door and make connections and work at a great publication or organization like the New York Times. But the unpaid thing, not so cool.
Agreed. But then again, I worked for free when I was interning, and at the time it was really normal. Nobody got paid to work in newsrooms.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I worked in a newsroom, so interns obviously vary depending on what industry you're in. But it does seem like more and more people recognize hard work. It's you might work for a very small stipend type of a thing, but you don't hear about as many unpaid internships anymore. And I think that's just because people work hard and pay a minimum wage, at least.
Yeah, just pay them something, you know. I think especially, I mean, we've all been students in the past. We all know that even if it's a little bit of money, every little bit helps if you're going through school and you have loans and to pay off when you're done. And I think it's just, you know, especially if someone's doing a lot of work. Like, I have had internships before in the broadcasting industry where literally I sat around and did absolutely nothing and had to try to find things to do. I don't think I should have been necessarily paid for them. But nonetheless, if you've had a good internship, and I have had an experience with a good internship and done a lot of work, including being on air as a TV reporter when I was just out of school, and I was working as a daily news reporter doing an internship. So in that case, it would have been nice to get a little bit of money.
Absolutely. New York Times, a lot of people would love to work there. If you can handle it, you're going to be in the area, you're a graduate student, and you don't want any money for your hard work, it might be the internship for you. But seriously, it seems like a really good opportunity, but they should be paying minimum wage at least. A quick reminder that we usually record the Social Hour Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Obviously, because we're at CES and times have shifted a little bit for a variety of our shows. We're a little bit later. So if you're watching live, thank you very much for tuning in off schedule. But for the most part, next Monday and going forward, we'll be back to our regular time. But if you can't watch us live, that is okay. You can always go to our website, twit.tv/TSH. That's where all of our episodes live. So shortly after our live stream ends, our audio feed goes up after a few different video feeds get encoded. Our video feeds go up. Once you go to twit.tv/TSH, you can subscribe to a variety of feeds. If you like watching our video podcast, you can subscribe to a variety of video feeds that we offer. If audio is more your thing, you can do it that way too. We hope that you watch the video because it's a little bit more engaging, but many of you are commuting, you're walking to and from. We certainly don't want you to be watching anything if you're in a car. So we try to give you as many choices as possible. Also, anything that we talk about on the show will appear in our show notes on any individual episode page. Our show notes will go up. So if you ever missed anything or you wondered what we were talking about or something flashed up on screen and you didn't have time to write it down, just go to our show notes because it will be there. You can also email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. And now that we're talking about email, let's go to a couple of our emails. Amber, want to be the first?
Yeah, sure. I'll take the first one from Jakers19, who writes, "Hey, Sarah and Amber, I have an interesting question and would like your and possibly your viewers' opinion. I currently have a free social networking app, Favorite, in the App Store. I would love to keep it free in order to increase the chances that lots and lots of people download, love, and share it. Ads are not viable because it would be contradictory to what the app is all about, which is friend recommendations. Can I set up a place to accept donations or tips on the site that would say, hey, Favorite users, in order to offset the development costs and keep Favorite ad-free? We humbly ask for tips." So basically, he is wondering where he would go to do something like this, to simply be able to have a little button where people can give him donations. And he also says, based on Apple development guidelines, he thinks it's okay for him to do this. Sarah, I was just thinking, and I'm thinking to Leo. I know he's taken tips before. I've done the same thing on my video podcast, but I can't remember how we actually set it up. Do you have any insight into that?
I do. In fact, Alex, if you take my screen, I will show you some of your options. And this is actually what we use at Twit's website. This is if you go to PayPal's website and you go into their products and services area, they have a variety of ways that you can get the word out if you want to accept donations. So one of the ways that you can do that is to just have a little widget on your website. So this is it's just code that goes onto your page. If you know anything about that, it's usually pretty easy to drop it into a right-hand rail, that sort of thing. You can create a donate button, and they usually give you, you know, a little bit of leeway as far as, you know, if you want something under it or you want to change the colors, that sort of thing. So to set up a donate page and have an easy way for people to donate on his website, Jake, I think your name is, Jake's website, that's a good call. If you go to twit.tv, in fact, what Amber's talking about is this Tip Leo area. This has been around on Twit for a long time. It looks a little bit different because we recently had our website redone. But if you just hover over the Choose Your Tip area, we have some options for people. But let's say you decide to, okay, I'm going to make a one-time contribution to Twit. What that actually does is it's a nice skinned PayPal donation page. So our internet's a little bit slow here at our booth. But as you can see, it takes you to the customized Leoville donation page. So that's the way that we're using it. But if for whatever reason PayPal's not your thing, there are many services that do the same, that give you the same types of tools. For example, GoFundMe, which we actually talked about on last week's The Social Hour, has some similar features. So this is actually, if you go into the online fundraising area of GoFundMe, it has a variety of tools and just kind of lets you know how you can spread the word. Explore features, many, many things like online donation widget. Again, you can put that on your own website. You can customize it. And then, of course, you have different sharing options, social media buttons, updates. You can embed code to customize a site, a donation site. So you have quite a few options. I don't think PayPal is, it's certainly not your only option. It's probably the most widely used payment service that most people will feel they can trust. But then again, not everybody likes PayPal. So I think it's definitely worth, I would be surprised if donation, if you find the donation service that you like, that they wouldn't have a widget that you could just add on your blog if that's indeed where you want to send people.
Yeah, and I think some good advice, and I believe that Leo has done this in the past, is just to kind of explain what you plan to do with some of that donation money. You know, even if you have to explain it in detail on a blog post or associate it with wherever you have that particular donation button, just set people's expectations if they're going to donate, what you will be doing with the money. Because I think it just makes people more comfortable the more context they have around what's going to happen.
Indeed. Got another email from Mark in Royal Oak, Michigan. Says, I was thinking about last week's Radar Fad, the Mention Machine, that was at Mention Machine. When we've all seen Google bombing. That's when some special crafted pages raise page rank of an unexpected site. It diminishes the value of the Google search process for sure. But how long before we won't be able to believe what's on Twitter? What I mean is, can someone increase trending through fraudulent tweets, i.e. Fritter?
Twitter. Never heard of that one.
Me either. I like it, though. If one can orchestrate a movement on Facebook, Twitter, etc., would they artificially raise a trend even temporarily? This could be innocuous as making fun of somebody, but as serious as having a group that gets people to gather in a central location, perform some act of terrorism. Food for thought. I feel like this is already happening on Twitter. I mean, if you just even look at some of the trending topics, a lot of that stuff doesn't mean anything. It's just sort of silly. Now, I say silly because it is fairly innocuous, but a lot of that stuff happens. It's not happening because there's actually a trending topic about, you know, you're stupid when type of thing. Hashtag. I mean, those sorts of things tend to rise up for no real reason. And I think if you were to put enough effort into it, you could certainly help a topic to trend, because who's really policing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be increasingly a problem, especially on Twitter. I mean, just because of the nature of Twitter, it's so flippant, right? These short little messages. We've seen this happen before where it has been trending that a certain individual, whether it's a celebrity or a politician, someone's written that they've passed away and that, in fact, hasn't happened. So you see how these things spiral out of control. I had an experience just yesterday where someone tweeted me and was asking me to sign a petition. And I read the tweet and at first thought, okay, of course I'm going to go sign this. And then I read a little bit more about the situation and, you know, got a little more insight into whether or not I should be signing that petition, and it kind of opened my eyes a little bit. So again, I think it is all about context. And I think on Twitter, you just don't have that context. It just happens too quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I don't really, as far as the Mention Machine, I liked the idea of that. And if you haven't watched last week's show, it was a Radar Fad segment. So you can go back and look at it if you're a little bit confused as to what we're talking about. But that was focused a lot more on sort of the political nature of what this year is going to be. And I think that Mark's point is, yeah, that's all fine and good. But let's say that somebody figured out a way to, you know, maybe spread a false story about a politician type of a thing. And that, you know, it's once it gets big enough, it becomes this beast that's very hard to quiet, because people aren't necessarily paying so much attention as to what is real versus not real, because it is possible to game systems like this. They're not perfect, especially when you rely on algorithms.
Yeah, I think it's one. I think it's going to be more and more common. I don't know what we do about it. I'm not necessarily so afraid of it that I'm going to stop using any of these services. But I think we all need to be more careful about the information that we get and trying to find more sources where we can kind of double check that information. And not everybody's going to do this, but I think we should probably get in the habit of it a little more, especially with big stories and you know, trends that just seem a little unlikely. Just trust your gut at those times, perhaps.
Right. So, Amber, speaking of Twitter, what do you think about Alec Baldwin's triumphant return? Is this real? Is it true?
Well, I don't know. So this is our tweet of the week. And we saw this before with Ashton Kutcher. You know, he said he was kind of off Twitter. He was back in a few days. Now, Alec Baldwin did sign off Twitter because of the incident he had with, I think it was American Airlines, Sarah, if I'm correct, with all that controversy. And he was off Twitter for almost 1 month. And he just signed back on January 7th with a tweet that said, back on Twitter. So that is our tweet of the week. And it's kind of funny because I just, you know, seeing some of these big celebrities sort of say, hey, you know, I'm done with this community, and then sign back on. Like, they just can't give it up. It shows you how addictive some of these services can be.
Well, it also makes you look so foolish because
yes.
when you sort of flounce off, like, oh, I've had enough, and then you come back, like, I'm back, it just makes it seem like...
Lame.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty lame. It makes it seem like you just want attention. If anybody who's not familiar with the Alec Baldwin controversy that Amber's talking about, he was playing words with friends on an airplane after they had left the... when they were out on the tarmac, so they hadn't taken off yet, but he wasn't allowed to be using his phone, and he got into a scuffle with somebody working at the airline, and they made him get off the plane. They actually they made him leave his what I'm sure was a first class seat, and he was very upset about it. And a lot of people rallied behind Alec, you know, as if the rule. I mean, they're stupid rules. Certainly, I feel like it's silly that I have to turn my phone off too before we're actually up in the air. But rules are rules. I mean, just because it's Alec Baldwin doesn't mean that he should be allowed to play words with friends any more than the rest of us if we have to turn off our phones. But people really, because I think it's just one of those FAA rules that just, you know, people, that it doesn't make enough sense for people to accept it. So Alec Baldwin was our hero, our champion, and hopefully he'll be back telling us more stories of his tech escapades on airlines and the like now that he's back on Twitter.
And he's been tweeting a lot too, you know, over the past few days since he signed back on. He's been tweeting quite a bit, and I think he's one of those people who really, he loves the spotlight, he loves controversy, he doesn't mind you know, kind of shocking people a little bit. I personally think he's hilarious. I really, really like him, but I think this whole, you know, leaving Twitter, coming back, I mean, I don't even have friends that really do that, so it's a little much. So let's, you know, hopefully they just stop doing that. I'm talking about celebrities.
I followed Alec Baldwin because I love Alec Baldwin on 30 Rock. He is just my absolute favorite. So when I realized he had a Twitter account, I thought, okay, he's one of the few celebrities, because I don't really follow a lot of celebrities, you know, just because I try to keep it focused. But there are a few that I do follow, and I thought he's going to be one of these celebrities that I'm going to want to follow. And it didn't take long before I unfollowed him, not because I don't like the guy, but yes, he was a prolific tweeter, and sometimes he was very opinionated, and I just thought, you know, in my stream regularly, I'm going to have too much Alec being antagonistic, so it didn't last very long.
Some of his
Maybe
stuff,
I'll give him another chance.
So much of his stuff didn't make sense, Sarah. I mean, I followed him for, there was a period of like 3 days when I was looking at his tweets where I literally did not understand anything that he was talking about. Like, he would tweet random things, almost like he wanted to kind of mess with his Twitter community a little bit. And I would say play if I thought it was more innocent, but I'm not sure it was. But I just got that feeling from him. I still do follow him, but I don't pay much attention to necessarily a lot of the Twitter messages that come across.
Well, if you want to follow Alec, good news, because he's back, baby. That's our tweet of the week. We definitely want to hear from you. Now, for any reason you don't listen, I'm going to tell you our email address again. That's thesocialhour@twit.tv. If you want to email us with a question, a comment, a thought, a service that you love, anything. We want to hear from you. Don't hold back. You can also leave us a voicemail at our Google Voice number, 2626 SOCIAL. That's 2626 social. Or, of course, you can always record a video, upload it, send us the link. You can just email us the links and put it up on YouTube or wherever you like hosting videos. And same thing, question, comment, idea. You want to show off? You got a little dance that you want to do? That's all good.
Oh, boy, Sarah. You're opening it up now.
Oh, I know. I'm going to regret this.
Dances, songs. Maybe someone could make up the Social Hour song, a little ditty for us. That would be nice.
I would. Yeah, we had somebody way back when we first started the show, 42 episodes or so ago, give us that little, it was our Google Voice ringtone, 2626 social.
Oh, yeah.
We stopped playing that. Yeah. We should really bring that back. Because our viewers are a shy bunch because we don't get a lot of voicemails. We get a lot of emails, but not a lot of voicemails. And I think you should all send more voicemails.
We need to be more opinionated on the show, Sarah.
You think so?
Maybe a little bit. You know, just say that, like, outrageous things. Like, all of a sudden I could just, you know, say Alec Baldwin is a total pig-headed jerk and I hate him or something like that.
Yeah, and just see who's listening. And the people who we don't alienate will know are real fans.
It's Amber true.
Can
it's
say
true.
Anything, I will still love her. Now nah, we yeah. the thing is that the two of us are nice to each other, because why wouldn't we be? So I wouldn't call this a controversial show, but that's really not what we're aiming to be. We want it to be...
We're not antisocial. It's not the...
That's right.
It's not Good the antisocial point. Hour.
Absolutely. All right, before we get to the best part of the show, which is Amber's Red or Fad, we want to thank NewTek. Now, here we are at CES in Las Vegas in the South Hall on our very own stage, many, many miles away from where we usually broadcast all of our Twitch shows. But because of NewTek and the NewTek TriCaster system, we can stream live productions from anywhere, literally anywhere. We loaded everything up in a truck, and Liz and Burke drove to Vegas, unloaded it all, set up a connection, and here we are. I mean, we can literally do anything. We're using the TriCaster 850. It's basically like having a giant TV truck, except with much less equipment and hassle and need for satellite feeds. It's great. 24 channel system, which gives you pretty much everything you need to make a professional TV show. We've got, you see our lower thirds here. We've got all sorts of effects. You can have virtual sets. We don't do a lot of that stuff because we have such a nice real set back in Petaluma at Twit headquarters. But here as well, I mean, we could, this is actually a real set behind me. See, you can't just, you know how hard this would be to just set up on some traditional old broadcast machine. We have so many effects, like having Amber's face just kind of appear in the middle of the screen. Well, that's a sort of a silly one, but you get the idea. I mean,
and there's
playing
more
around with the TriCaster for either desktop or portable production. So we can take our shows on the road as much as possible, and we love doing that. And with TriCaster, with NewTek, we are able to. So thank you so much to NewTek for sponsoring us. And remember, TriCaster lets us and anybody who uses it broadcast, live stream, project, and record HD video all at the same time. If you want to know more about the TriCaster that we use and other offerings from NewTek, visit newtek.com. All right, Amber,
Sarah.
Let's get to a rad or fad this week that I don't know how I feel about.
This is a trend that I've heard a little bit about recently. The idea being it's a digital detox vacation. So you go on vacation and you basically check in your phones or any devices you have. You don't go on the internet. You don't watch TV. And it turns out that St. Vincent and the Grenadines have launched this campaign where they're promoting digital detox vacations. So come to their islands, be there, and they'll allow you to totally detach if you choose to do that. They have a vacation package that weans people off technology, including an online coach and someone who will help you along the way. Now, this is a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. However, I'm sure there are people who would like this. I personally think this would be my biggest nightmare, to totally detach for a vacation. I enjoy being online and checking in now and again, and it would be very difficult. Maybe I have a problem.
Well, when I first read this story, and this was on Mashable, I'm reading it saying, wait a second. So it's a vacation where there isn't an internet connection, and the whole idea is that you get away from it all, right? Well, I've done vacations like that before. You just go to a remote place, and you really have no choice. This is sort of gimmicky, but it sounds like it's not just the idea of unplugging. But these Caribbean countries, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, for example, it's a vacation package that comes complete with a guidebook explaining how to function on a trip without tech. Like if you're like, I don't know how to function, and a life coach. So there's a lot of almost like a personal growth thing. How do I become somebody who can live without technology and feel good about myself? But these particular vacations are not cheap. 7-night getaway on a luxury island of this type costs $3,800 per person. That includes flights. That includes flights and hotel.
You could buy a new MacBook Pro, Sarah.
You sure could. Couldn't use it on your vacation, but you could buy. That would be instead of the vacation. But a lot of this is, it seems gimmicky to me. The life coach thing is, it almost seems like, if that's something that you're interested in, I don't know why you have to do it in the Caribbean. And if you want to go on a vacation without technology, You can unplug if you want to. I mean, if you simply can't do it and you need somebody to take away your gadgets and not give them back to you until the end of 7 days, it's like, I mean, do you have no willpower at all? I think this is something you could do for not that much money.
Yeah, I mean, the problem I have with it is, okay, let's say you go on a retreat and it's a yoga retreat. Well, after that retreat, you're going to feel better. Maybe you learned more about yoga. You ate really well. You come home feeling fresh. Now, if I check out for a week and I don't check my email, I'm going to come home to hundreds and hundreds of emails that are going to stress me out. I'm going to feel very behind on all those different social networks. I just don't think, it, you know, it's not reflective of how we live in society. I mean, we're very tuned in and tapped into using all this technology. I mean, there are many people who could use a break, but I'm not sure, you know, a full-on digital detox vacation is necessarily in order. Although I could see some spouses who don't like their partners who are constantly on their Blackberries and phones, maybe sending that individual on this vacation to get them to, you know, drop it now and again.
Maybe. Exactly. Leica in chat says some people just don't have the kind of willpower that it takes to completely unplug and use time vacation to decompress. I would say, I don't think I would have this problem. If I really wanted to detach, I could. My boyfriend would probably be pretty unhappy. If he truly could not, even for 5 seconds, couldn't check a little something or upload a picture because we're just so used to doing things like that. There are probably cases where people are truly, they're so wrapped up in technology that they're almost a little worried that they can't actually step back. And in cases like that, where it might actually be an issue for somebody, maybe this is your only option. I guess you could do it in worse places in the world. I would like to go to the Caribbean, and if it wasn't almost $4,000, I'd be happy to turn off all my cell phones.
They're probably not going to email us now and want to send us, Sarah, just so you know. We may not be the best contenders for this.
I lost my chance. I lost my chance to go to the Grenadines.
I think this is definitely a fad. I mean, clearly it's a marketing ploy to try to get more people interested. It is a problem, I'm sure, with many people who are too tapped into technology. But I think it is a bit of a fad. And I don't think we're going to see these digital detoxifications necessarily, you know, taking over and being the hottest new thing anywhere. Now, Sarah, I would go on a vacation, I will say, where they had the fastest internet in the world. And I would just download and watch stuff the whole time. So that's kind of the opposite of this. Maybe a whole other audience for that.
Yeah. What's the opposite of digital detox? Digital retox.
Immersion.
Yeah, digital immersion. Yeah, where it's just like, digital look at this. Immersion. I'm downloading a movie. Woo! It only took me 10 seconds. Woo!
That's actually more my kind of vacation too. Projecting all around me. Yeah, I could do that. You know, it was a whole immersive experience. Maybe we have a problem. We should talk after the show, Sarah.
This isn't a vacation for people like us. It's like, I know that sometimes it's good to, you know, close the laptop and get outside. I know that, but I enjoy my tech. I enjoy my tech enough so that at the very least, I want to tell people how good of a time I'm having on vacation because socially, I find that fun. I like connecting with people online. And through all of my photo apps. And I can't turn that off completely. It's less fun.
I think maybe there's a bit of balance. Like even if we're, I love all of the social networks. I love being tuned into technology. But when I go out and you know, I go to the park or something and I hang out with my son, you know, I will put the phone down if he wants to talk to me. Now, I will say oftentimes that I have been to parks where the kid's like tugging on their parents' pants and the parent is totally ignoring them while they're checking their BlackBerry. I never want to be that person. I think, you know, we all have to find a bit of balance in our lives as much as we love these things.
You know, Nick Bilton at the New York Times, who's a frequent guest on Twit, he wrote an article recently that was really along these lines where he said he was watching a sunset or something. And you know, he's taking pictures and he's trying to get the filter. And then he thought, you know, I'm sitting here. It's so beautiful. And I'm really not paying attention because my focus is on how I'm going to share this in as cool as possible way with as many people as possible. Not that he doesn't think that socially sharing is a good idea, but he said, I have got to, and I'm going to take 30 minutes each day where I make a conscious effort not to do any of that stuff. Wherever I am, I'm going to be present. You know, if you were at the park with your kid, if you're watching a sunset or all sorts of things, to just take it in, and not feel the need to disseminate it everywhere, you know, or this is where I am right now, or isn't this beautiful? Just, you know, it'll be in your memory. That's the only place it'll be. It's what we used to have to do. Yeah. So not the worst idea in the world. And I think that's true.
Yeah, a little digital timeout.
Absolutely. Well, Amber, speaking of timeout, we've come to the end of our social hour, which is not a moment too soon because they've started drilling behind me.
It's getting loud.
People in chat say it's not that loud on the other side of the stream, but boy, is it loud where I am.
Really? I can't even hear it, but...
I'm so glad.
I can understand having been there. Well, Sarah, make sure you have lots of fun, and I'll be tuning in all week to watch the different shows you'll be doing from down there, and I can't wait. I'm sure
Absolutely.
It'll be fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is just the first day of a long week in Vegas for CES. Coming up right after this, for anybody watching the live stream, in about half an hour, TNT will be live all week as well. But for now, we are at the end of the social hour. Remember, normally we're on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific live. So please tune in if you can next Monday. We'll be back, and we'll be back in Canada, and I'll be back in California, and everything will feel a little bit more normal again. And in the meantime, go to twit.tv/TSH for all of our past episodes. Get caught up. Maybe you missed a few. Now's the time. Watch some old social hours. They hold up well. You can find our show on iTunes as well. Or even watch us on YouTube. We try to make it as easy as possible. Until next week, from CES, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from South Florida, I am Amber MacArthur.
See you guys next week.
See you guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Bye-bye.